of my mouth, the meditations of all our hearts, be always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. We have entered a new season in the church calendar. You can see that we have changed the green color. We'll stay this way all the way up through Advent in December. And I thought that since we're starting off in this time, this ordinary time, as it's called, it might be good to talk a little bit about the prophets we're going to hear about. Elijah in particular. The lectionary, as we have it, the series of readings that we use, runs for 3 years, and each of the 3 years has a different emphasis during this time in the Old Testament. The first year we heard about Genesis and creation, and then followed Moses through the wilderness. The next year we heard about King David and the founding of the nation of Israel. This year we get to hear about the prophets. There they are, in particular, those people who called Israel back to God in that time after the kingdom divided and things started going downhill. And so I want to start out by giving you an image for Elijah. Picture for a moment one of those medieval icons of a saint. He has the halo around his head, eyes fixed heavenward, this beatific, peaceful look upon his face, even as his legs being gnawed on by lions, arms upstretched towards God, embodied as a dove descending from on high, placed there in this gilded frame, just gorgeous and serene. That is not Elijah. Elijah is the gruff old man with the scraggly beard and the big stick who comes in, knocks that picture off the wall and says, "Get a clue, folks. There are things to do out in the world. Why are you standing here just staring? Let's do something." Elijah was, if nothing else, abrupt with everybody, with kings, with God, with those around him. He got right to the point. And I think we can forgive Elijah for being a little abrupt. After all, he was the prophet in the time of King Ahab and his much more historically famous wife, Jezebel. Now, after David's monarchy was Solomon, and after Solomon's son, well, let's say that he was not a really great politician, and most of the northern half of the kingdom decided that he wasn't really supposed to be king. And so the kingdom divides. There's the northern half, which is referred to as Israel, and the southern half, which gets referred to as Judah. And this goes on all the way up to the time of the Romans. And Elijah is a prophet in the northern kingdom. And each of the kings that comes after Solomon in the northern kingdom, the first book of Kings says of them, and they were really worse than their father. And of Ahab it says, and he was worse than everybody who had come before him. He was really awful. He is the worst king that Israel had, at least according to the folks who wrote the history. So, and one of the things that he really did that upset people, first of all, was he married this lady Jezebel, who was in and of herself a rather manipulative person. She also worshipped the Baals, foreign gods. And Ahab thought that these prophets of God, the God of Abraham, were being a little annoying. But it was Jezebel who said, well, if you find them annoying, have them all killed. And so by the time Elijah shows up, he's the last prophet of God. All the rest of them have been killed. And he says to Ahab and Jezebel and the rest of Israel, God is upset. There's going to be a drought. No rain, no water, 3 years. And then he goes and wanders off in the wilderness as prophets are wont to do. Oh, let's face it, he goes and hides. After saying things like this, this is not the time to stick around. So he's off the wilderness. The ravens bring him food. But eventually the drought catches up even with Elijah, and he realizes he has to go back to where there's a well, somewhere where there's a deep well where there's still water, because the river that he's living next to, the little stream, has dried up. And God says to him, go and you'll find a widow. It's always a widow. Go and find a widow. She'll offer you a drink of water. So off he goes. And here's this widow collecting sticks. And Elijah says, bring me a drink of water. And she says, we can do that. And as she's going off, she says, also, can you bring me some food? And she looks at him and goes, don't you know that there's a drought? And Elijah says, yeah, I'm familiar with the drought. I know a little bit about why it's going on. And she said, look, I have enough food for, I don't know, one meal for my son and myself. And then we're going to die. There's no more grain anywhere to be bought. And even if I could buy it, I don't have any money. I have nothing. And Elijah says, okay, go and make yourself some food. But before you do, make me a small thing. Trust me, there'll be enough for the three of us. At least this once. Okay. So they all three head off to her house. And she, there's a great meal of it stored in a big ceramic urn, big clay pitcher. And she looks at it and goes, there's no way there's enough for the three of us. Because, trust me. So she takes her measure and reaches down into the thing and scoops around, scrapes up, and pulls some out. And, well, indeed, there seems to be enough for the three of them. And she goes, but there's not enough oil. Look, where am I going to, there's a drought on. We can't have any oil. Elijah says, God will make sure there's enough. Okay, and so she takes the oil and pours it out. Slowly, and sure enough, there was enough oil there. She makes the cakes and they eat. You can imagine the next day comes along and she says, so now what are we going to do? We're out. There's no meal left. We're out of oil. Elijah says, there's enough. Just try it. Just scrape around it. So she takes her measure and she reaches way down into the urn and scrapes around the corners and shakes a little and turns it on its side. And sure enough, she manages to pull one more day's worth of food out for the three of them. She looks in there and goes, there's a few crumbs left, but that's it. We're done. And same thing with the oil. She holds it up and shakes and it just barely comes out. And she says, so now what are we going to do? We don't have enough. And Elijah says, look, God will make sure there's enough. And the next day it happens again. And somehow, she looks and goes, this pot has more corners to hide meal in. And out it comes. Enough for the three of them. In a sense, this is the way this is God's style of abundance. Just enough. But always, just enough. There's faith involved. And I can see this widow, constantly looking in there and going, not going to happen tomorrow. I know I got every last grain out of there yesterday. There's not going to be enough for tomorrow. And tomorrow comes along and you shake it and you look around and sure enough, there's enough for another day. It is God's way of abundance. It's not so much that it's overflowing sometimes, but it's enough. Not wasted, but neither is it hoarded. And I think this can apply to all saints. I have sat in vestry meetings and we've all looked at the budget and went, don't know how we're going to make it this year. And we scrape around and we look at the bottom of that urn and we pull out one more year's worth of stuff. And I've got to believe after all these years that God will provide enough. Now, this goes along for a while. It says not just a few days, months. Months go by. And I wonder if by the end, the widow is starting to think, maybe there might be some more in this pot than I thought there was. Maybe there might be some more. and her son gets ill. Now, we have to understand, for a woman in ancient Israel, you were provided for by some male relative. Your father when you were young, your husband during most of your life, and then in your old age by your sons. A widow's son was her guarantee that she would be provided for. And all she had to do was get this boy to adulthood, and he would be able to provide for his mother. And so when her son falls ill, you can imagine that all the grain and oil in the world wasn't going to relieve her of her suffering. And she goes up to Elijah and says, okay, so we had enough grain, but what's the point of having enough? My son's dead. And I think Elijah agreed with her. And Elijah takes the boy, takes him up to his own room, and looks at God and says, okay, God, come on. This widow, you saved her life, you got her through the famine, and me too, and now you're going to take her son from her? Come on. And then he prays over the boy. And I love the way Elijah prays. Now, if you look at the way David prays, King David has these long, expansive prayers. Lord, you are the ruler of the universe. You have wonderful things. You've done all this stuff for me. Your majesty is great. Yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. And then these long petitions about how Elijah just says, God, this boy needs to be healed. God, we need a healing right here, now. And God listens to Elijah. In some ways, I think that God made life listening to Elijah better than King David. Maybe not. Maybe God listens to everyone in their own way. But certainly Elijah, straight to the point, God, healing. And the boy comes back to life. Now, this story has one more bit to it. And had Easter fallen a week earlier, we would have heard it last week. Don't ask me why. I don't write the lectionary. I just preach off of it. But I think it's important to finish off this story. So bear with me. I'm going to tell you how this story ends. After saving the widow's son, Elijah and God decide that it's time to end this drought. And God is going to end the drought so that the people of Israel know who ended the drought. And so Elijah goes out and finds King Ahab, who is desperately trying to find water for his animals, and says to him, we're going to end this drought. Meet me in 3 days at Mount Carmel and bring all those 450 prophets of Baal that you think are going to help you. And so they meet, and Elijah says, let's take two bulls. You take one, and I'll take one, and we'll both sacrifice them as burnt offerings. But don't light the fire. Instead, we're going to pray to God. Pray to God. You pray to your God. I'll pray to the God of Israel. And we'll let God light the fire for the burnt offering. And everyone goes, oh, that's a great idea. Wonderful idea. And so he says, well, okay, you followers of Baal, you pick your bull. I mean, I wouldn't want anyone to say that, you know, your God didn't listen to you because you got the inferior bull. And we'll let you start early in the morning because I know it's going to take you a while to get everything set up. And so they go off and they set it up and they start calling on Baal and keep calling on Baal and nothing happens. And they keep calling and the Bible has a wonderful word for it. He says they limped around trying to get their God's attention. And Elijah sits there mocking them. He says, maybe your God's meditating. Maybe he stepped out for a moment. I know. Your God has gone on vacation. No, I got it. He's asleep. You'll have to yell louder to wake him. And the priests are getting frustrated and they're trying to do all these things to prove how worthy they are of their God's power, and it's just not working. So Elijah says to all the people who are gathered around watching this, okay, come over here. and he sets up his sacrifice, rebuilds the altar of God, sets up his bowl, gets everything ready, and then says, okay, bring me, and remember, we're in a drought here, bring me 4 big jugs of water. And he pours 4 big jugs of water onto the sacrifice. This is a burnt offering. The idea is to light it on fire. Pouring water on it is not conducive to lighting a fire. And he says, okay, bring me 4 more. 4 more big jugs of water, and the ground is getting wet. He said, 4 more. 3 times, 4 jugs of water. All, you know, there's a big puddle, there's a big lake around this thing. And Elijah says, God, show the people who's really God. And the Bible records that out of heaven a great fire emerges, consumes the bulls, consumes the wood for the offering, consumes the altar, consumes all the water around it, and consumes the dust under the water. This is abundance God style. Sometimes we are so dense, so hung up, that only something great, big, and showy is going to get through. And so, God can not only be abundant in that small scraping at the bottom, but in this big way as well. But it's not because God is somehow more or less. It is about our faith. God didn't save the widow because she was somehow special. God did not raise her son because she was somehow more pitiable than all the other widows in Israel. God did not bring fire to Elijah's burnt offering because there was some sense of power or some ritual that was done to appease God. God did this to show us that God is a God of abundance. God is a God who will always bring enough, whether that be faith or time or money or just a sense of well-being. God will be enough for us. And Luke knows this. Luke, when he writes this gospel, wants us to think about Elijah and this widow and remember God's being abundant. In fact, Luke wants to say, and God, as embodied in Christ, is even more so. Whereas the widow had to feed Elijah for months, when Luke says Jesus came upon a son of a dead widow, nobody asks Jesus. Nobody says to him, look, don't you understand what's going on? Jesus, of his own accord, feels compassion, goes up, and brings this boy back to life, brings this young man back to life. And the phrase that the Bible gives us is, and he gave him back to his mother. Now, our English translators have very nicely cleaned that phrase up for us. But those who study Greek and write books on it tell me that that phrase in Greek is really an awkward way of putting it. It would be something that would sound weird to somebody who was used to speaking Greek. And the reason Luke writes it that way is when the Septuagint, when the Hebrew was translated into Greek, they translated that phrase out of Elijah, and he gave his son back to his mother, and it was the same awkward phrase. It's sort of like, you know, in the days of Emperor Augustus, there was a decree went out that all the world should be taxed. It's a phrase that everybody would have been familiar with, and it just would have reminded everybody, oh, that's that story from Kings about Elijah. Luke is trying very hard to make us remember this story when he tells about Jesus raising this boy, and to remind us that Jesus is even a greater prophet than Elijah, that God has sent not just rain, not just life, not just an abundance of faith, but his own son. Our call, then, is to follow God, not out of a sense of duty, but out of a sense of abundance. to look for those places in our life where God has blessed us. Sometimes with just enough, sometimes with all that we can handle. Look for that place in your life where God has found a way to bless you. Look for that spot in your life where God is coming in and giving you all that we need. Amen.